time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 1st of September 2012. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua. On Saturday, the 1st of September, I spoke to Matt Artinger from the management company of the Waiheke Recreation Centre, the opinionated islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone, and I talked with Rhiannon from Waiheke Library about their Adult Learners Week program. Some of you may have seen in the papers over recent weeks that there's talk of change at the recreation centre, the big building down on Donald Bruce Road where lots of people go and play basketball, do gym, all sorts of kind of recreation activities. And there are that building and the facilities and the way it's operated, there are some proposals for change around that, and that's promoted some controversy, but you know, that's what we're here to talk about. And so I've got Matt Artinger from the management group of the Recreation Centre here with me there this morning. How are you, Matt?
Good morning. I'm fine. Well, thank you.
Okay, so just why don't you just explain for us perhaps how the centre works and with the management company and so forth. What's the structure?
Well, currently we're under a commercial model, which is the way it's been for the last 10 years. Basically, our company, New Sports Generation Limited, put in a tender to operate the facility 2 years ago, to which it was accepted by the Waiheke Trust Board, who govern or who own the building, and Auckland Council. But back then it was the Auckland City Council, so it's a bit of a love triangle, you could say, between all three parties. Our role is to operate and look after the facility. We're also to bring in community groups and start off initiatives based on what outcomes the Trust Board and the Council would like to have on the island. That's what we've been doing for the last 2 years. And it's been great, yeah.
Okay, so the kinds of things that you do as the management company include what, running programs.
Yep. That's right. We're running programs. We run them based on the need of Waiheke. What's out there, what we feel is best for the island, or what opportunities there are for different user groups, old and young. We've got a few programs that that are of a strong nature to the community, or should I say, with our after-school program and a holiday program, which affects quite a few of the families. It's an OSCA subsidised program that is with Ministry of Social Development, and those programs cater to a lot of parents and families who require after-school or holiday program service. We've got junior basketball programs for sport. There's obviously the gymnastics club, which is a pretty big club on the island, who utilise the facilities. We have our adult groups, indoor soccer, and our strong indoor social league basketball on a Wednesday night that a lot of people are familiar with. And we've just started a new initiative, a basketball group with Surgeon Jean, who hired the facility to do a basketball comp on Friday nights. So we're well positioned in trying to bring those ideas and initiatives to the rec centre.
So some of the programs are clubs who come along and say, hey, you know, we want to play, I don't know, badminton, can we hire the facility for a while, and then other ones are ones that you've initiated, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. We've got one club that utilises space, which is a club. Also, we've got two now. One is the gymnastics club, the other one is Tukaha, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu club, with Chris Bailey.
So has that changed? Were there more clubs using it in the past?
No, there were less clubs using in the past. We've increased, obviously, the participation rates both for clubs and user groups, or just people actually coming through the doors.
Right. And so now there are some changes proposed. So So you've got a trust board who oversee the operation of the building,
yes.
And they work in conjunction with the council. I think the local board have a position on that, on the trust board, don't they?
Yes.
So and they've made some decisions to change the operation of the centre.
Yeah, basically, the local board decided in June to inform the Waiheke Trust Board, who govern the building, that there'll be $10,000 less in the funding grant to go towards the Waiheke Recreation Centre. They also informed them that that at least $20,000 a year was needed to upgrade the facility. So the building's 10 years old, and what's happened is that the Trust Board haven't gone out to fix up the building appropriately as the time frame has gone on. They haven't gone on to maintain it to a good enough standard over the time. Now for the Trust Board's prime responsibility of the building, to look after the building, was to seek outside funding or outside sources or revenue to upgrade the building. Hence, they've got to this position. They hadn't done anything, and they were warned for over 5 years, basically, that you need to start, finding alternative funds to upgrade the building, fix the toilets, fix the ceiling, look after the floor, those types of things. Well, with the 10 grand being cut this year from it, they've decided to go to a new model, which will then put in a person to just caretake, open and lock, a cleaner, and someone just to run the books. The other $20,000 of the grant they're now putting towards the maintenance. So that's the major changes for us.
Yeah. And so what percentage of the programs operating at the centre would you say are initiated by the management group, by your company?
All of them.
Right.
All of them bar one club, the gymnastics club.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. Everything that's running at the rec centre has all been initiated by us.
Yep.
Yes.
So, and of those kind of programs you initiate,
yes.
How many of those would, if you weren't there, would some of those just occur anyway? Because people would get together and organise themselves, would there be a club that could facilitate that?
They could, but it won't happen. When you go to a user pay charge, is effectively what it is, it becomes then $60 an hour or $90 an hour for the gym hirage. Now, unless you've got 120 participants like the gymnastics club, most people who want to play badminton or volleyball, really there's a handful of friends, let's say 5 to 10. And for the first 2 weeks, it'll be great. They'll turn up with their $10 or $5, and they play. And then after 3 weeks, people have things to do. It's basically, long story short, it's unsustainable. And it can be done, but you need a really strong core of people that want to do it. Organisation, all the logistics that go with running the competitions, or just utilising the facilities, is where we come into play to do all that on behalf of people. What will happen is that you rely on volunteers to do that. And as we know, it's tough out there in the world, and time. Not a lot of people have time to do things of what we do for fun or leisure. They sort of, we've all got busy lives.
Yeah.
So to speak.
So I mean, you mentioned sustainability there, I suppose there is also some question about the sustainability of the current model, though, isn't there? With your company running it, obviously the boards are concerned about that.
Yes. Yeah. There are sustainability models, but again, we refer that it's only been forced on them based on the fact that they haven't seeked external funding. The grant initially was raised to $85,000 in 2005 by, I believe, Penny Sefa-Weaver at the time. And the terms of why it was increased was the Trust Board back then wanted more programs in the rec centre, because there was nothing going on. So they had a big shiny building, but there was nothing going on in there because they were running off $25,000. That budget got increased to $85,000 to go towards an operator, which is like us, to establish all these programs and get them running and get them going and to sustain them. Effectively, what's happened 10 years later is now they've changed the way that they want to utilize the funding, and instead of using money that they should have got from outside the $85,000 to maintain the building. They're cutting into that money of $20,000 plus minus, you know, or $30,000 to upgrade the building. But they're going around and saying that they've found extra funding. Well, they haven't. They just cut into the operator's funding for what it was there for. So,
yeah. So how long does your operation contract have to run?
We are finished at the end of this month. It's the 1st of September, yeah, 30 days. We're pretty much finished. We've been in negotiations with them trying to, but the relationship between the Trust Board and us are not seeing eye to eye. There were a lot of transitional changes with the Super City that we believe that they've used as excuses as to why. An original tender that we applied for the Rec Centre guaranteed us 3 years with an option to extend to 2016. So we put in the tender for 6 years effectively. We've been given two. So it's... from our perspective, it's hard to take because we invested into the Rec Centre and we invested into the programs on behalf of what they had asked us. And at the end of the day, because of a funding cut and because of their lack of initiative to go and seek external funding, you know, they've chopped into effectively the operator's funding to facilitate and operate these programs on behalf of the community.
Yeah. So at the end of this month, those kind of programs that have been initiated by your company will come to an end mostly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what about the after school care program?
Yeah, well, that'll end too. We're actually looking at wrapping it up pretty soon, even before the 30 days. It's just no longer at a sustainable model. Our initial model was based on a yearly annual basis. Basically, through the middle of the year is the busiest time of the year, which the board has always known, and so have council known. So most of the budget that we get out of our funding to operate the building go towards the maintenance of the building, warrant fitnesses for the buildings, the upkeep of the building, especially through the winter time because that's when everybody's indoors. So, you know, things are getting, you know, broken, you know, a bit of wear and tear and extra cleaning and all those kind of things. And what would happen is at the end of this term would be get a grant for the final term of the year, and because it's not being utilized is where our company would make some money back. So we've had to make some changes and let go of a few of our staff members as of the 2 months ago so that we could actually finish up at this time period on the 30th of September, you know, without any debts really. So it's been tough for an operator's perspective. We don't obviously believe that we've been given the rub of the green, you could say. There's been a lot of politics from our view, and a lot of interference from local board, and we don't feel that that they're really acting on behalf of the people in regards to a broad issue that affects a lot of families, just a lot of community members, old, young, and yeah.
And from what you're saying, it sounds as if some of the, you know, the people who are utilising the centre, I mean, they're not organised into groups, so they're not organised in a way that they can go and, you know, advocate to the local board or whatever.
That's right. A lot of it, but part of our program was to cater for everybody. So we have structured clubs, as you say, like the gymnastics club and the jiu-jitsu club. You can go and join that club and be a part of them, and whatever fees they charge to you, that's what you do. Then we've got our fitness suite, which is our members, and it's pretty much a drop-in fitness suite. And then we have our organised sport, which is organised by us, and that's that there is a drop-in organised system where people express the interest they want to play basketball or indoor soccer, and we put them into a team, and that's all they've got to do really, and they're a part of the community. And then what we do is we then turn the teams up after 10 weeks and get them to play with other players of different abilities and levels, and what's created is quite a freely family and friendly orientated atmosphere that people love and enjoy, because they're learning different skill sets, and they're actually starting to realize there's other people outside their normal circle that live on this island that they can, you know, have become good friends with. And so, you know, we touch on a lot of, say, commuters in that aspect who leave in the morning when it's dark and they get back when it's dark. And for some of them, it's their only touch with the community and the island. And dare I say it, they really look forward to their Wednesday night basketball or Friday night basketball or Tuesday night indoor soccer, because they don't need to be a part of a club or anything. They can just drop in and play with their friends and their new friends.
Are there a significant number of young people participating in those? I mean, is it, yep, you know, teenagers and so on?
Yep, it's a family, it's a social mix adult league, but with our junior basketball that was running at the same time, we were upskilling our kids to a level that when they were good enough to participate, they were entering in the team. So there was a lot of mentoring there. So that we were trying to push and promote the father-son issue there, and try to pull the families and the young ladies of the community. So we had daughters and sons playing alongside their fathers, and then against their fathers and against their mothers on the court, and it was really, really healthy. I mean, it's still going now. It still is healthy. It's just a shame that, you know, come 30 days' time, that'll end because of the new model.
Yeah. Oh, well, thanks very much for joining us, Matt, and let's hope that there can be some kind of resolution.
Yeah.
I should make it clear as well, we did invite the trust board of the Recreation Centre to come on to the station and talk, but they've said that they don't want to make a statement at this time. So we have invited them, and that invitation is still open to them, so hopefully we'll hear from their perspective at some point as well. Okay, thanks very much, Matt Artinga from Waiheke Recreation Centre. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
You're on Waiheke Radio. This is Island Life, bringing you Waiheke people, events and issues. The first Saturday of every month, I'm joined by the opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone. They're both with me in the studio. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
morning. Well, we've got a bit of a drought here. We've got not much to be opinionated about on Waiheke. Although there's plenty of world events, but Waiheke seems to have gone to sleep. But that's August, eh?
That's all right. There's plenty going on around the place anyway, isn't there? So maybe let's start off with the happenings in the Beehive this week. So we've had a couple of pretty major issues considered by conscience vote this week. So let's start off.
Two in a week is quite unusual, isn't it?
It is. And interesting as well that the same-sex adoption bill has been drawn from the ballot. So that one, that one's coming up soon.
Yeah. Now, I think those conscience votes are really interesting because you see people for what they really are. And you know, they're not voting on party lines. And it's quite fun to see them stake, you know, the way someone like Nick Smith and National can be so conservative. And Morris Williamson, who you thought was quite conservative too, came up with this wonderful quote. Did you get it?
No, what was that?
Someone stopped him in the corridors of the Beehive and said, "What do you think about the gay marriage?" And he said, "Mate, I'm a libertarian. If you want to marry your dog, that's fine by me, as long as your new wife dog doesn't crap on my lawn."
Not bad.
I thought that was fantastic. And so I said, thumbs up to the good people of Howick who've got Morris as their man.
I was... it was amusing to see, though, that the most rednecked response to all that came from sections of the Labour Party.
Yeah, the Polynesian.
Polynesians are very rednecked about all this sort of stuff.
It's sad,
It is. It's extremely sad.
There's probably a thesis in that about sort of colonial overhang or whatever, because, you know, they got...
No, it's just religious delusion. They're particularly hot on that.
Yeah, but part of the whole colonial thing was the religious takeover, and then these people got so heavily into the new religion and kind of took it to, you know, they took it on board wholeheartedly, and this is the kind of hangover of that.
Yes, right? It was unpleasant to watch.
That's sad.
To see that, you know, that these folks can't bring themselves to be a little more understanding and tolerant.
Yeah, well, like the Catholic Monsignor in Whanganui saying, let's be a bit tolerant now, yeah.
Yes, about time.
But on the gay thing,
who could keep their lunch down 10 days or so ago, as we were forced to listen to John Banks explaining his religious delusions to us? John Banks, he's a creationist. Fantastic.
Bless him. But he's also done an amazing turnaround on the gay marriage thing, because there's a quote of him from 15. 20 years ago when they were discussing the homosexual homosexual law reform bill, the things he said about homosexuality then were kind of off the scale.
Yeah.
And now he's all voting for it, so it's quite...
Yes, true. Whilst simultaneously telling us what a god-botherer he is.
He's a joke. Well, I want to know if... I'm really, really looking forward to seeing if the good folk of Epsom will vote him in again, you know? Like,
oh, I do hope not.
Well, mind you, he's good for...
We'll come back to that because I want to talk about those proposed changes to the MMP, which will have an impact on that, so we can pick up on that. But the other issue voted on a conscious vote this week, and interested to hear what you've got to say on this, Alan, being somewhat of an expert in the field of booze.
Yes.
Is the decision to retain the drinking age at 18.
Well, it's amazing that they put all that effort into... discussing it for a couple of years now, presumably spent a vast amount of money, generated lots and lots of paperwork, and put it to the vote, and we end up right back where we started.
Yeah. But do you think it's a good place to be where we started?
Well, I don't see it makes a huge amount of difference. Yeah. Teenagers who fancy a drink or two are incredibly resourceful.
I find it, yeah.
And it doesn't matter what you do. If a teenager wants to get bladdered, they will find a way to do it.
Well, and it's one of those things where the real issue is hidden. The real issue is parenting that doesn't actually make alcohol a normal part of your mealtime and civilized behavior.
Exactly.
And because all of these binge drinking teenagers are the ones that it's like a secret activity. You know?
Yes. You know, you hit 14 or 15, oh, I can't wait to go out and get drunk.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is pretty awful watching some of the footage of downtown Auckland. Yeah. There really are some very, very silly people.
But the background to that is a parenting issue.
Yes,
you know?
It is. Well, it's not something that I encounter very much, because if there's one thing that teenagers won't drink, it's craft beer. I did my bar manager's certificate interview a year or so ago, and they do them in a group now. You don't go one-on-one with the licensing inspectors. They put you in a group and they go around and ask questions. And there were... these two women who were applying for a license for a cafe somewhere north of Auckland, and the question that was put to them is, how do you keep underage drinkers from coming into your premises? And they came up with the stock answers that you're supposed to give, and I said, well, if there's one thing that I found, if you want to keep underage drinkers out of your premises, serve nothing but craft beer, because teenagers won't touch it. Oh, I don't like that. It tastes of something. You have to be a grown-up to drink craft beer. Yeah. It's an excellent way of keeping the teenagers at bay.
Yeah, well, which leads directly onto the Alcopops issue, the way the government backed down so quickly on the Alcopops thing. That's, you know, if you talk about, you know, craft beer having real taste, alcohol is Alcopops are just sugar masking the alcohol.
Yes. So.
And they glug that stuff.
The thing is, I think if you do try and legislate against these filthy alco pops, sooner or later teenagers are going to realise that it's an awful lot cheaper to just go out and buy a bottle of cheap brand vodka and a bottle of, you know, whatever horrible fizzy burpy drink you want to mix with it.
Yeah.
And you'll be getting twice the amount of alcohol for...
I have to say, that's what we used to do.
And that's what that kid that died from King's College last year did exactly that. Mm-hmm. He got himself the bottle, yeah. Yeah, so where would you vote on the conscious vote? You would just stick for the 18?
I think so. I mean, it's, you know, it's 18 in most countries. Yeah. Well, apart from America, I think, have a pretty high. It's 21 over there.
Well, there's some odd anomalies if you split it, you know. So you can buy it at a restaurant when you're 18, but not at an off-license. So you can go to a restaurant...
That's just overly complicated.
Yeah, but the logic doesn't stack up. You can go to the restaurant, drive home drunk, where it's more... Yeah, it might be better to go.
Yes.
I think
the thinking behind that has always been that if kids are in licensed premises, they're generally going to be safer because there's adults around who might spot the warning signs.
Yeah.
Whereas those same kids, if they head off to the beach or something with a vast amount of booze, anything could happen.
Yeah, sure. But it's definitely not an easy fix for it. I think we just got to keep working at making small amounts of alcohol in a normal social situation, just normal.
Yeah.
You know, class. You know, even a 10-year-old kid getting a bit of white wine with soda water for lunch, just make it normal, you know, and then,
or a little bit of beer.
Yeah, beer, shandy, whatever. You just don't turn them into binge drinkers. The binge drinking happens where you suddenly turn on the tap.
Yes.
Yeah. Like you say, I'm 15 and I can suddenly get away from home.
Yeah.
And the tap's on, you know.
Yes. I want to be staggering down Queen Street at 2 in the morning being sick all over the place.
Yeah, it'd be quite interesting.
I can't wait.
If we videoed all those people and showed them up, would that show them up or
no.
not?
Yeah. I think, you know, it's like trying to reason with your dog.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, how could you have done that? And the dog just looks at you and goes, well,
it's quite an interesting point.
Just doing what comes naturally.
It's an interesting point because in a lot of places, there's a kind of public social justice in public ridicule. But if you publicly ridiculed the drunken teenager, they probably wouldn't see it as an they'd see it as a badge of honour rather than an embarrassment.
I think they probably would.
Whereas,
speaking of which, did you see Sir Bob Jones' column in the Herald suggesting white collar criminals put in the stocks?
I love it.
Yes, and that rotten tomatoes could be provided so that they could be pelted with them.
Well, I think they should. You know, that's where public ridicule would work. You know, these guys really get laughed at quite seriously. And that other guy, Dragojevic, what's his, Auckland Council manager guy, he should be subjected to widespread public ridicule.
Well, I mean, if you work for Auckland Council, you deserve to be publicly ridiculed anyway. that just comes up with the rations.
Whether or not you're so bad as he was.
Yes.
So, I mean, there would be plenty of takers, I suppose, if the stocks were brought in for white-collar criminals this week, we've seen plenty of it.
Yeah, do we have enough tomatoes? You know, if you go to the supermarket at $12 a kilo, I mean, I'm not going to pay 12 bucks a kilo to throw the tomato away, so we'll have to find something else. Cowpats or something.
Cowpats, yeah. Yeah, that would be pretty good.
There are plenty of those.
Yes, as far as that guy who...
nice sloppy cowpats.
The road rage incident where this maniac drove over somebody with his car... And then drives off, and then, as an afterthought, calls the police. Oh, I seem to have run over some Asian guy. Can you send a couple of your chaps to clean him off the road, please? bad enough that happened. Now, obviously, I don't listen to talkback radio because it's vexatious, but I'm sure yesterday talkback radio must have been boiling over with people just amazed, not only at the crime in the first place, but the way in which the judge... suggested that, oh, look, you know, you're a nice chap, pillar of the community and that, so you dealt to some pesky Asian. I'm sure you're a nice person, and slapped him on the wrist and sent him on his way.
Yeah, it's a terrible incident. But I think that guy misbehaved in a way that it still staggers me.
Yes, the sheer arrogance of it.
Driving his daughter to what should have been a nice event in her life, and there's a little incident in traffic, and this guy ends up, you know, behaving like a cretin, you know. There's something wrong there.
Unbelievable infantile behavior.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're not one for giving people the finger at the roundabout in Nonirau at the Mallet?
No, God, no. It's just, there's no point. It's just pathetic.
Well, I mean, we don't have that sort of problem here.
Nobody gets hurt if you just back off a little bit and let the other guy go.
Yeah.
Nobody gets hurt. Everyone has a better day. You know, if someone's a bit impatient, just let it.
Particularly when you're sitting behind the wheel of a ton of metal.
My dad has a lovely maxim in the traffic. It goes like this: when in doubt, chicken out. And you never get into trouble that way. You just back off, leave it. You know?
Mind you, is your dad still in South Africa?
Yeah.
Road rage in South Africa can turn very nasty.
Yeah. It's worked for him. He just backs off, chicken out. Yeah.
Yes.
But there's no point, you know. It's just, you like to think after all the years of advancement in humanity, we've got to some point of IQ or altruism or something, we can figure out that escalating a trivial incident to the point where you run someone over.
Yes. Behaving like a 3-year-old when you're driving a car is not a good idea. Mm. But the judge's comments, I mean, the talk about bringing the law into disrepute.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone reading that would just think, didn't this guy even give a moment's thought to how bad this was going to sound?
Yeah.
Obviously not. Yeah. Judge Neave. What a cretin.
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of a stock thing in the movies, some doozy old judge that's way past it and half senile, and maybe we've got a few of those as well. Not every judge is as clever as the next one, eh?
Well, the thing I would recommend to everybody if you want to laugh at this whole thing is to look up Peter Cook's fantastic judge's summing up speech that he performed at the one of the first Secret Policeman's Ball comedy shows. And this was at a time when the leader of the British Liberal Party had just got away with a charge of conspiracy to murder. This is the Jeremy Thorpe trial.
Yeah.
And everyone felt at that point that the judge had definitely instructed the jury, you know, to go away carefully to consider your verdict of not guilty. And Peter Cook got up and he did this send-up of the judge summing up, and it really was rather similar.
The
jury should now retire, as indeed should I.
I wonder if you could have some kind of system whereby you assess judges' logic. You know, this guy was so off the pace, this guy Neve, you know, what do we do?
There surely must be some basic test to see if senility has set in. And if it has, which it clearly has done in this guy's case, then time to, send him somewhere quiet where
one of the elements of natural justice that always intrigues me about the situation of judges is to get to be a judge, you have a long career in the legal industry. And you get to be a judge, you know, go through these things where you pass the bar or whatever it's called. You get to be a judge. By now, you're a very wealthy, usually quite sort of conservative-leaning, you're in a certain place.
Yeah.
So this particular judge would have related much closer to the rich guy in his Saab than he would have to the recent immigrant from Korea.
Yeah.
You know, so if you can get to what I'm saying, judges are all of an ilk and their judgments reflect that. You know, they tend to favour people like them or the wealthy or whatever.
Well,
you know?
one of the best write-ups I saw on it yesterday. I know Cameron Slater, the right-wing blogger, is not particularly popular with a lot of people, but he summed up that whole business quite well. Particularly, he said, when the judge was saying, "Oh, if this had been an altercation in South Auckland, I'm sure we wouldn't even be hearing about it." And Cameron Slater pointed out that if the accused in this case had tried that kind of thing in South Auckland, he'd still be in hospital right now peeing through a catheter.
So do you think that's natural justice?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Now, let's return to because we were talking about John Banks before, and so we've had his kind of, religious pronouncements about creation.
Yeah.
And then we've had probably surprised some people that he voted for the marriage equality bill.
Yeah.
But maybe that's, his party bearing some influence there.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think you could possibly keep up this pretense of being a libertarian in charge of the supposedly libertarian party and then say, no, I'm not in favour of marriage equality. That would...
And now
get
we
rid
see
of whatever shreds of credibility the man still has left.
Yeah, and now we see the recommendations on the MMP review, and I suppose National must be kicking themselves a bit because National brought up this MMP review kind of without really any call from the public.
Probably going to lose ACT.
And now the recommendations, if the recommendations go through, which are to drop the threshold to 4% and to get rid of the coattail, which is what led to the teacup. Deal with John Banks.
Yeah.
Both of those things could actually be quite harmful for National.
Yeah, that's fine by me because I think the Banks, the teacup, the whole history of ACT for the last two terms, Rodney Hyde and Banks, has been a joke. It's been an absolute joke. You can't hold up any positive element to it. So if they lose it, that's fine by me.
Yeah,
it's totally fine.
But I mean, it's a shame because at one point it was the party for those of us who are right-leaning but would not consider ourselves conservatives.
Yeah.
I'm very definitely not a conservative.
Yeah.
If conservative, the key to being conservative is you're afraid of change.
Yeah.
Me, I embrace it. I can't get enough change.
Well, they're all different examples of conservatism, and they're quite interesting places where they sort of overlap in awkward ways, like conservationists are also conservatives in a sense. They don't want the environment to change.
Speaking of conservative beliefs, it's been fantastic watching the debacle of the Republican National Convention in Tampa, Florida. Yes.
I reckon this guy Romney is a bit like Sarah Palin in trousers. I mean, he's hardly better, is he?
Oh, no, he's certainly not that bad. although his VP pick was definitely aimed at at keeping the Tea Party happy. Yeah. But I do love American politics. It's the greatest show on earth.
And it is a show, yeah.
Well, I can't wait for November.
The thing that amazes me about American politics is, you know, everywhere else in the world, politics is showbiz for ugly people. But in America, they've gone the whole hog. You know, did you see there were pictures of Romney's wife making her speech? And she's 63. She's well preserved. I tell you, she's a walking Botox, L'Oreal, collagen, whatever. She don't look 63. She looks real showbiz, you know.
Yeah. I thought one of the funniest things was this week was with the convention about to open in Tampa, Florida, and Hurricane Isaac bearing down on it. The right-wing broadcaster Rush Limbaugh observed that the hurricane itself was all due to Obama controlling the flow of information about it. And so, to which somebody said, "Oh, I'm voting with the guy who can control the weather."
Oh yeah, sure.
But you've got to wonder, you know, who it was in the Republican Party who said, right, well, where are we going to hold the convention this year? And they're like, oh, let's go to Florida.
Yeah.
Is that trouble?
Hurricane season?
That's going to be in hurricane season. Yes, but they have fantastic hookers. Yeah, but it's hurricane season. Hookers!
Yeah. Oh, God.
No, we can't go to Tampa. It's hurricane season. Why do you hate freedom so much?
The scary thought is, you know, a couple of things could happen in the campaign and this guy could get in, you know. What happens then?
I don't really think it's going to be that much of a worry. I know everyone likes to scare themselves with the bogeyman of the right-wing American government, but the fact is America's set up with a hell of a lot of checks and balances.
True.
And he'll get in and he'll be just as boring and ineffectual as all his predecessors have been recently.
Yeah, well, I know very little about it, but, you know, there's so much power in the Senate and down, you know, into the state legislatures and things, and you can tell that apart from foreign policy and some sort of major national things like the healthcare reforms and stuff, the presidents can't do much, you know.
Yeah. They can't, and I think it must be particularly galling for Americans these days to find out what it was like to be British in the 1950s. Realizing that the great dream is over, you're not a superpower anymore.
You're losing it, yeah.
You may still have a great big military, but you can't do much with it.
Yeah,
because nobody takes you seriously.
What you do with the military is lose money. You just throw away money, you know. And you're deploying a military, a large military, is just a stupid thing.
Yeah,
anyway.
But I mean, to look at America now, that once great superpower, money's all gone, credibility's all gone.
Yeah.
Country's hopelessly polarized.
Yeah.
It's not a nice, not a nice state to be in.
Yeah, and also its moral impetus is gone. You know, one thing I always thought Obama could have done was shut down Guantanamo Bay, and he couldn't because of the power of the military.
Yeah.
So, but that polarizing of the nation is an interesting one. You know, you could almost.
Well, I was talking to my brother yesterday. I called him up for his birthday. He lives in Maryland. And I was talking about the, you know, the political scene here on the island and how I enjoy mixing it up with online and on the radio and so forth. And he says, oh, you've got to be careful. And it's like, well, no, not really here. He says, yeah, I suppose not. He says, over there, it is just toxic.
Yeah.
Everybody is just against one another.
Yeah.
The country is just pulling in two.
Yeah, I think you'd be branded immediately. And I think that's the great thing about New Zealand is, you know, we've just in the past 10 minutes, we've glossed over the gay marriage and the alcopops and everything else. And it's amazing how we can do that with such apparent ease, because in the American system, you'd entrench yourself into some...
Yes. We're a nice grown-up country, New Zealand. That's what I love about living here.
Yeah, we can do that. I mean, we have moments when we lose it, but I think generally we can good. And I think the gay marriage bill, sort of just going full circle again, is wonderful how sanity's prevailed. 80 of the MPs are voting for it.
Yeah.
You know, it's all cool. You know, like, what was the fuss, you know? Have
you got exactly. Yeah. You know, it'll come in and everyone's, oh, the sky's going to fall in because of this, and then it doesn't, and everyone just goes on as normal, and a year from now, we'll be wondering what all the fuss was.
Yeah, well, the one thing that intrigues me is on a personal level. You know, I've always thought that the definition of a wife is that person that keeps you waiting while you're in. You're sitting in the car, you've got a dinner party to go to, and you're sitting at the, you know, down by the driveway waiting, and this person keeps you waiting. That's what a wife is. Now, will that happen in gay marriages? Will there always be one bloke, one woman? One half of the operation will be the one keeping the other one, what do you think?
I've no idea.
Will they have all the same hassles as ordinary marriage?
I thought one of the best quotes was from that, lives on the island. He was being interviewed once on TV.
Kevin Hague?
No. They were asking him, the structure of gay relationships. And he said, gay people go through much the same kind of breakups. It's just we have nicer things to argue over.
Yeah, more stylish.
Yes.
I'm always interested in the development of words in our language, you know. So are we going to develop new words? Someone suggested that for two blokes getting married should be a barrage, B for blokes, so yes. Barrage. And two girls getting married should be a garage. So we're going to have now three types of marriages. You're going to have a marriage, a barrage, and a garage. And it sounds kind of a nice idea, but so often these nice ideas, lexicography,
yeah.
when new words get invented, I'd love those words to become part of our parlance in the future. Like, yeah. So we could say they're in a garage or they're in a marriage or a barrage. But who knows, maybe those words won't stick. But they sound like three defining, precise words we could use, eh? So, what's your relationship? You can see it in Facebook. What's your relationship? In a garage.
In a garage, yes.
Or in a barrage. Still waiting for the bloke at the end of the driveway, the one that always keeps us running late. Lovely stuff, eh? Hey?
I was wondering about the ceremony. You know, I now pronounce you man and...
Husband and husband.
Husband and husband.
It's not exactly complicated.
No.
But the little I know of it is there's often, there's sometimes there's a sort of dominant, not quite right, but there's often a husband role in a, and, oh, yeah, I'm digging myself
up.
Yes. Back off! Yeah, back off!
You want to stop, right?
I think you want to stop.
Yeah. So we've been talking...
Just call it a garage and we'll all know what the story is.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, we're in a hole, stop thinking.
And Alex will be waiting in the car at the bottom of the driveway.
Yeah.
Yeah, Alex Knight and... Alex Stone and Alan Knight, the Opinionated Islanders. And thank you very much for joining us again this month.
I must return to my brewing exploits right now.
Yep, they'll be back on the first Saturday of next month with more views on island national and international affairs,
and we'll hope that news on the island has picked up a bit.
Yeah, we could make some. I reckon a mass gay marriage would be a go.
Mind you, it's quite nice to spend 20 minutes not talking about the Esplanade.
Yes, isn't it just?
We avoided it for 20 minutes.
We did. And yeah, good luck with the venture.
Yes, thank you.
All right, okay. Waiheke Radio. Joined now by Rhiannon from Waiheke Library. How are you this morning?
Good, thank you.
Excellent. Now, Adult Learners Week has it started or does it start next week?
It starts on the 3rd of September.
Okay, so when's that? It's the middle
Monday.
Of the week. Monday?
Yep.
The 3rd. Okay, makes sense. All right, and what's happening at the library for Adult Learners Week?
Okay, well, we've got three great workshops coming up. On the Wednesday, on the 5th of September, we've got Waiheke Budgeting Service coming in and offering a workshop called Budgeting Makes Sense. And it's about a workshop basically for people who are wanting to find out how to create their own budgets and plan cash flow over a period of time. So that'll be a great workshop, really good introduction to sorting out your finances. Now, the reason we've got a finance theme is because it's not only Adult Learners Week, it's also Money Week.
Okay.
So we've combined the two. So we're kicking off with that one. And then on the Friday, on the 7th of September, we've got library databases, free resources for you. So that's showcasing some of our digital library. and particularly those resources that save you money. So we've got things like Freegal, which is free, legal, downloadable music, and we've got some other great resources. And that workshop is going to be run by our new library assistant, Julia Mount, who has a long history of adult learner education. And both of those workshops are at 11 a.m. So I'll just repeat that. 11 a.m. Wednesday the 5th of September is Budgeting Makes Sense, and 11 a.m. Friday the 7th of September is Library Databases. Now, those workshops are both held in the library. So
Money Week, who organises that? Where does that come from?
Oh, I think it's a national campaign that's run. I'm not sure if it's just coincidental that they've combined this year. I haven't actually looked into whether they've been combined before. But, it's a really good opportunity to combine the two learnings, because I know myself that one of the things that I'd most like to learn as an adult is how to make my money go further and how to budget. So the final workshop we've got is actually on the Saturday, and that's a different time. That's at 2 p.m. Saturday the 8th of September, also in the workshop in the library. And for that one, we're having a bit of fun, getting a bit crafty with a repurposing workshop. Now, some people have rocked up to the library and said, "What is repurposing?" It's the new term for things like upcycling or recycling materials. So say, for example, you have a whole load of jars kicking around in the garage, you can repurpose them and turn them into vases or whatever you're wanting to do, paint them up and things like that. Another really cool one I've seen online is you've got a whole load of old jeans that have fallen apart, you cut the pockets out and put them on a bit of fabric and turn them into pencil holders and things like that. So there's all sorts of amazing things you can do to be really thrifty and really crafty and have some fun, and instead of throwing those old things out, turning them into something new.
So who's running that one for you?
That's being run by a local repurposing expert, Anna Pashby. Now, she's actually got her own business in repurposing. She sells things online. She does beautiful brooches, which are all made from recycled materials, and she also makes bags and things like that as well. Beautiful stuff.
Okay. That's going to be a bit of a squeeze in your little library.
I know. Well, we'll make the space for it. We'll probably have that in the front of the library so people can come along and have some fun with that. And we're all looking forward to the new library when we'll have more space for things like this. But it'll be great.
Yeah, it's I suppose predictable but disheartening that, you know, already they're behind schedule.
Yeah, well, these things happen. But yeah, we're still optimistic and looking forward to seeing that first spade go into the earth, as it were.
Great. Now, is there an easy way that people can go and find, say, online when you've got your various events listed and so on?
Yeah, our events are generally listed on the website for the library, so you can always look at that, or you can give us a call. So I'll give you our number. That's 374-1325. Now, it's not a Waiheke number because it goes through the Auckland Exchange, and if we're busy on the phone or we're closed, then somebody at the Central Library will answer for you. Yep. So it's 374-1325.
Great. All right. So have a happy Adult Learners and Money Week.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rhiannon. You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onaroa.